All righty, hour number two of our radio program. That's right. It is the Zach Gelb Show, host on CBS Sports Radio. Tonight is a golden opportunity for the Los Angeles Lakers. You have a postseason field right now that has been underwhelming. And anytime you start to fall in love or think that a team is starting to really come together, they take a step back, and it shows you that this postseason, in order to go win the championship, it's going to be challenging, and really, it's kind of unexpected of what is going to occur, where before the postseason did start, you would say it's either Miami or Boston to get out of the Eastern Conference, and in the Western Conference, it was either the Denver Nuggets or the Phoenix Suns, and one of those teams in the West is going to be eliminated after this round because Denver and the Suns are tied up at 2-2. It looked like Denver was going to quickly dispose of the Phoenix Suns, but give credit to the Suns for finding a way to tie up this series over the weekend by winning games 3 and 4. And you look now in the East, Milwaukee's already donezo. We found out on Thursday that Mike Budenholzer is now out of a job. We'll have to wait and see who's going to be the next coach of the Milwaukee Bucks. But you look at the remaining teams in the Eastern Conference, Miami, I think they take care of business tonight up against the Knicks, and they take a commanding 3-1 series lead. Miami, even with the Jimmy Butler injury, has still been able to do their job where, okay, you beat the Bucks, which was tremendous. I don't think a lot of people are going to be oohed and aahed about finding a way to quickly dispose of the New York Knicks if you are, in fact, able to do so. But you look at that second round series between the Celtics and the Sixers, Philadelphia, even though James Harden has been sensational in games one and games game four, there was also games two and three where he combined for 5 shots made from the field. So I don't know what version of Philadelphia you're going to get, even when James Harden plays well, because Embiid yesterday in the fourth quarter basically did squat, and he was tremendous the first 3 quarters, but he did not elevate his game, and you need that third piece in Philly. And it seems like whenever James Harden plays well, you don't get that great effort from Tyrese Maxey and also Joel Embiid. So you need that third star to kind of emerge or just kind of play the role of, and I can't believe I'm going to say this, Landry Shamet, like what he did for the Suns yesterday when you have Durant going off and Booker going off. And then for a big stretch in the fourth quarter, I think at one point Shamet had like 12 fourth quarter points. I forget what he finished with just in the fourth quarter, but he was on fire in fuego yesterday in the fourth quarter. And a guy like Tobias Harris is just collecting money. I do not see him being that third player, and he's designed to be or could be one of those third players for Philadelphia. So the East, it's like you look at it, I can't fall in love with Philadelphia. Miami, now with Tyler Hero being out, I know maybe he could return as early as the NBA Finals. We'll see if that is even going to happen, and then how effective will he be. I love Butler, and Butler could take you there. I don't think you're winning a championship, though, just on your own with Jimmy Butler, as much as I love Jimmy Butler as a player. And Boston, they still may get there, but I have not loved what I've seen with the Boston Celtics. They were really just at times lethargic in the first round against the Hawks. Coming back yesterday just shows you that they have a different gear and they weren't able to win the game. Game one, they no-showed up against the Sixers, and they didn't even have Joel Embiid, and you let James Harden basically come fresh off the plane from partying in Vegas to then open up a can of whoop-ass on you in game one. So the East has just been there, and the Bucks are out of it. You still probably think Boston is the best team, but Boston's got to show me why I should love them. And you look in the Western Conference, it was Denver, and Denver still may win it all. I still love Denver as a team. The Suns, though, they could just as easily be the reason why Denver doesn't get to an NBA Finals this year. And you look at the Western Conference, the Warriors did a great job ever since going down 2-0 to the Sacramento Kings, but so far, as Steph has not played great in this second round, and now you have the Lakers in a postseason that it's just begging someone to really command and take control of the postseason for a significant length of time. I give a lot of credit to the Lakers because they embarrassed Memphis in the first round, and now going into this series, I think a lot of people were loving Golden State and picking Golden State based off what Golden State did ever since going down 2-0 to Sacramento. And this is a Lakers team that could be one injury to Anthony Davis, one injury to LeBron James away from having any shot of going to an NBA Finals, just poof, and evaporate right into thin air. And LeBron hasn't even been that great, and they're still finding a way to do this. But Anthony Davis has been a stud, and it's very feel-good, just like how you kind of felt really good for James Harden yesterday and after game one. It's that same way with Anthony Davis, even though he's shown you his importance when he won a title a few years ago in the bubble. But with how much he gets clowned and how much people kind of forget how great he is because the conversation has been filled with injuries and punchlines, the street clothes stuff that Charles Barkley throws out there, which I always do crack up about, even though we are talking about someone's injuries. It's like you look at Anthony Davis, not that he's a joke, because when he's healthy, he's a top 10 player in the league. But a lot of people forgot how dominant and how important he is to the Los Angeles Lakers. And I just want to know tonight with Los Angeles, who I'm starting to say, wow, the Lakers are looking really good. The Lakers, and credit Rob Pelinka, who like never gets any credit, because whenever LeBron is running a team, the coach and general manager basically gets zero credit. But what Pelinka did at this deadline, bringing in Rui, going out there and getting D'Angelo Russell as well, making some other moves too. This has been a nice little retooling of the Lakers team at the deadline to at least give them a shot. And the Lakers have known for a while, if you get into the dance and you have a healthy LeBron, you have a healthy AD, you may have a shot to have some success, but they made the right moves at the deadline where maybe they could do a little bit more and a lot more than what people thought. But as quickly as I say that, if the Warriors win tonight and maybe Jordan Poole shows a pulse, Steph has a great game, Clay has another great game, things like that, then this is 2-2, and you're right back into the hopper of, okay, this is a second round, and it's going to be an absolute dogfight. With how quickly the Lakers dominated Memphis, I'm just fascinated tonight against a team that we know has a lot more experience. They are a much better team in Golden State. They have that killer instinct. That's the thing tonight, is I want to see the Los Angeles Lakers show me that killer instinct. When you have a great champion in the corner and they're on the ropes and their knees are starting to wobble a little bit and they're getting weak, can you start to deliver that knockout punch? Because if this gets to 3-1, and I know, right, we've seen LeBron on the other end of this when his team was down 3-1 and come on back. I just don't think LeBron James and the Lakers would blow a 3-1 lead, even though you can never count Golden State out until you beat them four times and there'll always be a tough out. Hickey, this is a massive night, not only for the Lakers in terms of winning this series, but the Lakers kind of sending a notice to the rest of the league that all year long, and deservedly so, right? We heard your jokes. We heard you write us off and count us out and doubt us. The Lakers can send an enormous statement tonight if they go up 3-1 and they take care of business after that, because it does feel like Denver and the Suns. That feels like a seven-game series. Right now, I don't know if the Lakers-Warriors series feels like a seven-game series right now with what we've seen transpire in the last two games for Los Angeles.
And it's like, I know the Warriors are not peak Warriors, right? We're not talking about 2016 or 17 or 18 when they were virtually outside of 1-3-1 blown lead, unstoppable. But it's still nonetheless impressive by this Lakers team that, again, like you said, was kind of written off for dead for a while, was very inconsistent, was injury prone, not a lot of guys stepping up around LeBron and Anthony Davis, and they have kind of showed you that it does matter getting hot at the right time. They have absolutely peaked right now at the right time and would be a massive accomplishment. You go up right now 3-1 on the Warriors, assuming you don't blow it in the reverse of 2016. Yeah. I know there's different teams, but, you know, LeBron and Steph, at least that storyline, it's on a reversal, which definitely would be interesting for sure. That's an impressive statement series win by the Lakers. Absolutely.
And game one was good in this series. where it was 117 to 112 in the Lakers. They went on the road and they won the game. And then you saw Golden State just show you that championship DNA and blow out the Lakers. But then in game three, it was the Lakers who threw that punch back. I just hope we get a close game tonight, and I hope we see, regardless of who wins, something more like what we got to see going back to, that was a week ago, because that was on a, or a little less than a week ago, because it was on a Tuesday. I would like to see more of what we saw in game one. Doesn't matter to me who wins. But after that game one, I think a lot of people thought this was going to be a seven-game series. We won't know if this is going to be a seven-game series until after tonight, because if this goes back to 2-2, then it will have that feel of a seven-game series. But just with what you've seen in games two and three, and yeah, it went back and forth, right? One blowout to the next blowout, so maybe tonight it's a blowout back in the Warriors' advantage. It's just like you got to break that trend, and that's why I want to see if the Lakers tonight can finally, with both these teams in this series, show that consistency where you could go win back-to-back games. Because it has been a little bit of a seesaw, even though when you get on one side of the seesaw, it feels like you eject the other side off the seesaw with how lopsided some of these games have been. I just got to see that killer instinct. If you want people to really believe in the Lakers tonight, they go out there and they take a 3-1 series lead. And I'll be fascinated to see if they're going to be able to do it. And also on the Golden State side, we talked about this last year. It felt like Golden State last year won a championship without even playing their best brand of basketball. Like, I remember when Golden State won that title last year, we all thought there was a different gear with maybe Klay then coming back and being fully healthy. And you looked at that team and you thought they could be better. Maybe Golden State, to just play devil's advocate on the other end, maybe they haven't showed that best brand of basketball yet. And maybe they're still going to be able to show you, even when they aren't at their best, they're still better than every other team in this league. So tonight, I do think the Lakers can win the series tonight. I don't think Golden State could win the series tonight, because if they go 2-2, then after that it's a best of three. You could throw a coin up in the air and anything could happen. But Los Angeles has so much to gain tonight just because they could really start to put the nail in the coffin of the Golden State Warriors. And you know it, when you have a team that just knows how to win, in Golden State, if you get a chance to issue and execute the kill shot, you better hit. And this is a massive opportunity tonight for the Lakers to implement that kill shot, and we'll see if they can do it. Because if they don't, you give Golden State, not that you can't win the series for Los Angeles, but you give them life once again, and okay, it's a best of three series. We're going to trust our experience to get the job done and win two out of three, even though you are going up against LeBron. I mean, we know how much experience LeBron has, but we've seen the more recent, throughout the entire roster, Golden State go as far as anybody winning the championship last year.
I'm really interested to see how the Lakers come out right out of the gate, because you got to think the Warriors are thinking exactly what you're saying. You go down 3-1, this series is over. So they're going to come out basically treating this almost as an elimination game. And that's why I do think tonight the winner of the series, or the winner of this game, I should say, wins the series. Lakers go up 3-1. Sorry, Golden State, you're not going to see a 3-1 comeback. I think you're done. And if the Warriors win, though, tonight, I do think with two of the next three games at home, they will win the series. And the thing with the Lakers is, we've seen it now time and time again. Good game, bad game. Good game, bad game. From specifically Anthony Davis. And when he is bad, it's not he's missing shots. He's not aggressive. And it almost feels like too many times he's comfortable. He sits on his laurels. He goes, okay, game three, big, you know, performance for me. We dominated. We got the win. Now it's like, oh, we can kind of
I'm off the hook.
Right. Yeah. We can let up a little bit and we'll see how game four goes. No, you have to put your foot now on the gas, because this is probably, I think, your best chance right now in knocking off the Warriors and sending them home.
And we all know that even when LeBron doesn't hit 30 points, he still fills up the stat sheet. But it's kind of crazy that we have now seen, because round one, that was a six-game series for the Lakers up against Memphis. And this has been three games so far. It's kind of crazy we haven't seen a 30-point performance yet from LeBron James. 21, 28, 25, 22, 15, 22 in the six games up against Memphis. And so far up against Golden State, it's been 22, 23, and 21. So that's like the other part of this, too. yes, Anthony Davis has been such a big key, but we haven't really seen LeBron go off in the point department like we're used to LeBron James, who, by the way, averaged almost 29 points this year in the regular season.
I think it's twofold. I think it's one, I think even LeBron recognizes for us to be at our best, it has to go through AD. So he has taken a more passive route. He is passing first, looking for open teammates. And two, I think partly foot, also partly wind. He just doesn't have the stamina anymore to play 43 minutes a night and play at an insanely high level like we're used to seeing for so long. Like, even the other game, game two, he had 21 points in the first half. He was cruising. Then all of a sudden, just 2 points in the second half. I know that game got out of hand, and he sat for a large part of it. But it's also, too, he just you see him. He's out of breath. He's just nowhere near in the shape we're used to seeing LeBron James at this point.
I think it's the injuries. This has been a guy that the last few years has suffered a lot of injuries. Like, we used to look at LeBron, and he would play pretty much 40 minutes, you know, 38 minutes every single night. And it's like, eventually, even though his body, I don't want to say crumbling because that seems like it's just sensationalized and over-the-top dramatic, but when your body even starts to break down, he's still in better shape than most players in the NBA. He still can find a way to still be a top five player in the league. Like, we all know, even when LeBron loses a little bit, he's still going to be great. But I think all those injuries kind of show that even Superman can't be Superman forever with how long LeBron James has played, being in this league since 2003, and up until this chapter in Los Angeles, not missing many games. And it's not like you're missing many games by design because of load management. He's been missing games because of injuries.
And it's not a slight at LeBron James at all, because if you think about it, he's 38 years old, but if you want to include talk about basketball years, I guess almost 42. Like, he's played almost four seasons, full seasons worth of playoff games.
Mm-hmm.
So you're talking about a guy who's basically, in basketball years, 42 years old, still playing at a solid level. He can't get to that, you know, elite level we've seen so many times, but it's still, he's playing really well for, again, a guy who is basically 42 years old, which is still insane to say.
It is Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. We'll take a break. I saw a top 50 list today of the top 50 quarterbacks in college football entering this season. When we come on back, Hickey and I will do a little draft for the future for this year in college football. I'll pick five quarterbacks. He'll pick five quarterbacks. We'll do that next.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
It is Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. So I saw that Big Game Boomer released his top 50 quarterbacks entering the 2023 season. Just to go through the top 10 real quickly, you had Jalen Daniels in at number 10 from Kansas, Austin Reed from Western Kentucky at 9, Joe Milton, Tennessee, in at number 8, Jaden Daniels, LSU, 7, Sam Hartman, who's transferred from Wake Forest, Notre Dame, in at 6, Bo Nix. Who are the Bo Nix? Like, a year ago, before Bo Nix went to Oregon, would you have ever thought Bo Nix would be a top five quarterback entering college football? Like, after that first performance at Auburn, sure. But ever since then, it was a lot more bad than good. And what he did last year, he won a lot of people over. So he's in at 5. Jordan Travis at Florida State, 4. Michael Penix Jr., who was great last year, with Kalen DeBoer at Washington, 3. Drake May, 2, and then Caleb Williams in at 1. Like, Hickey, if we do a draft here and we do five quarterbacks each entering this college football season, if you had the number one pick, you would take Caleb Williams, correct?
Absolutely.
And then let's say if you had the number two pick, you would take Drake May, correct?
Probably, yes.
Who else would you? Well, hey, probably. That's perceived to be 1 and 2 in the NFL draft already entering this season.
Right, but that's also, you know, not exactly how he's going to play this year, more projecting the NFL level. A little worried about the weapons around Drake May and North Carolina.
Okay, so I would still say that if you were drafting quarterbacks, it would be 1 and 2, Williams and May in this exercise. So let's just take them out of it, because I would be shocked if anyone listening would call up and be like, okay, I have two better quarterbacks than them entering this season. Maybe I'm wrong on that comment, judging by the way that you answered that. And now I may have to revoke your title as the most knowledgeable person of college about college football at this network. But let's just take them off the board. I will go first. I'll take Michael Penix Jr., which, here's my one concern with him. It's always the injuries. Like, at Indiana, it was the injuries. But last year, he kind of reminded everybody when he's healthy how elite he could be. A lot of people were annoyed that he was not invited to New York as a Heisman finalist. You've just seen the way, and they had him run fewer times. It felt like last year. Actually, it was a career high in rushing carries with 35 attempts. I thought he ran the ball a lot more at Indiana. Maybe that was just much so my memory up against Penn State, and that just kind of taking over the entire thing when he was trying to stretch that ball out down at the end zone. And you're going to tell me he was out of bounds, right, Hickey, when you go back to that play?
Well, I have to tell you that he was out of bounds. The video shows it, but...
Well, what did they rule on the field?
Fortunately, referees were blind that day. Getting paid off. I mean, a lot of gambling scandals in college football baseball right now. I think Indiana may have been ahead of the curve here to investigate them.
But last year, he was just absolutely elite. 31 touchdowns, 8 interceptions, almost threw for 4,700 yards. I'll go Michael Penix Jr.
I like that pick. I like that pick a lot. I will buy into the hype here. A little wary, but I'll still buy into it. I'll go Jordan Travis, Florida State. A lot of expectations for Florida State. Still not sold on Mike Norvell and that offense, but I'll go Jordan Travis.
I'm going to say Sam Hartman here. I thought he was excellent at Wake Forest. I like Marcus Freeman a lot at Notre Dame. And he's got to prove a little bit more here. A lot more, obviously, in year number two. I'm just a big fan of Sam Hartman. I'll put him in off the board.
I will go then buy into the hype. Bo Nix. He is someone who I did not think was going to be anywhere near a good decision maker. I mean, yeah, at
deservedly so.
Mostly bad, very inconsistent, flashes of good, but consistency-wise is a major issue. And his credit, he matured a lot last year at Oregon, made really good decisions, and I think that will carry over here into 2023.
Some other notable names, by the way. Drew Aller, Penn State, 26. Cade Klubnik, Clemson, in at 27. Quinn Ewers, who's already been named the starting quarterback, we'll see how long that actually does last for, is in at 35 at Texas. Deion Sanders, Kid Shedeur Sanders, in at 11. Cam Rising, in at 13th, who I'm a big fan of Cam Rising. Taulia Tagovailoa, in at 17th. J.J. McCarthy, in at 16th. I'll give you two other big names here. K.J. Jefferson and Spencer Rattler, 22 and 23. But taking Williams and May out of the conversation, my first two picks were Michael Penix Jr. and Sam Hartman. Yours were Jordan Travis and then also Bo Nix. I believe in this guy a lot, and I've said this before. If for the next 5 to 10 years, if you're going to make me pick who's going to be the third best coach in college football, once you get past in whatever order you want, one and two, with Nick Saban and Kirby Smart, I'm going to buy in to LSU with Brian Kelly, so give me Jaden Daniels.
I like that one. I did not think you were going to go there. I like Jaden Daniels. I think he'll have another big year or really kind of build off of the second half of the season.
I actually almost went him in front of Sam Hartman, if I'm being clear with him in the last answer. Clear with you in the last answer.
You know what? Let's stick in the ACC. Let's get crazy. Let's get nuts. I'm going Joe Milton. I liked what I saw in that last game against Clemson. That's an offense that's going to put up big numbers, I think, no matter who is in there. I know they had a massive departure, especially at skill play, at receiver especially. But I do think Tennessee and that offense is just immune to losing big players. The show will still go on. Let's go Joe Milton. Big, big year for the Vols.
Okay. I'm going to go based off pretty much your same thing, the system. And that's at Western Kentucky. And we've seen the historical numbers that quarterbacks have put up in years past. When you go back to Bailey Zappi, I'll take Austin Reed. He will be my next pick there, my fourth pick.
I'll go with a known commodity, and a man who's, I think, maybe older than me and you combined, who's going to go into like his 10th year in college. I'll go Cam Rising, your guy. I'm taking him right out from under you. Really, really good at Utah. I think another big year, even with Dalton Kincaid now going to the NFL, still Cam Rising. Steady, steady ship. I think he'll rise all boats around him.
Come on up for the Cam Rising. And you recall when Kyle Whittingham joined us last year, he's like, we're going to do what's in the best interest for him, but we'll probably push for a big Cam Rising for Heisman kind of campaign if he would return. So you know that's going to start to get pushed out if it hasn't already. For Cam Rising, the quarterback over there at Utah. Now, that's a tough one because I feel like the last one, you kind of don't make this pick based off past experience. Like, you go into the future. I love J.J. McCarthy a lot, but I'm not going to pick him here. I'm intrigued by Kate Klubnik at Clemson, and we'll see if Clemson can really bounce back and get back to that Clemson standard of getting to the college football playoff. As you know, it did not work out when you look back at the time with DJ Uiagalelei, as we thought it was going to, is now at Oregon State, who, by the way, is at 49th on this list. Keenan Slovis has been everywhere. Now is at BYU, is at 42nd. Just going over some other names here. I was disappointed with Jackson Dart last year. He's 32nd on this list. Dylan Gabriel, 31st. Will Rogers at Mississippi State is in at 29th. So I'm looking for kind of, based off more so a gamble kind of pick, but I'm going to go to Colorado and go with Shedeur Sanders. And we'll see what he's going to be able to do at Colorado. We know what he's done before at an HBCU, but even though Colorado may not have the best season as a team, you just hear so much about his upside and how much big game potential he has, so I'll go with him.
You know me, I'm a stubborn man. I like to dig my heels in when things go south, and I'm about to do that with this last pick. I'm not going to go with the homer pick of Drew Aller, although I think big year is coming.
I'm shocked.
I, though, will double down on a guy in a team that I thought was going to make the college football playoff last year and was an absolute embarrassment. I'm going Dylan Gabriel, Oklahoma, big bounce back year for him. He's a lot of talent. Things did not go well last year. Second year in the system. Brent Venables hopefully now is kind of, straightened things out. I'll go Dylan Gabriel with a kind of wild card last pick.
I knew you weren't going to take J.J. McCarthy. I would have gone J.J. McCarthy over Dylan Gabriel. And you would not have taken Sanders, right? Just by judging how you've talked about the Colorado program, I feel like you're down on them as well.
I got to see it before I can believe with them.
Do you want to take a guess where Kyle McCord is at on this list at Ohio State?
I actually looked at the list recently, so I know he's like 18 or something like that.
19,
yeah.
And Carson Beck at Georgia is at 18 right now. So, okay. So I ended up going Michael Penix Jr., Sam Hartman, Jaden Daniels, Austin Reed, Shedeur Sanders. You do go Jordan Travis, Bo Nix, Joe Milton, Cam Rising, and Dylan Gabriel. I don't know why when I was jotting down this list, when I wrote Bo, it auto-corrected to Bobby.
Hey, Bobby wants to throw 45 touchdowns and 3 picks. I'll take
him. You call him whatever.
Exactly right.
Bo, Bobby, whatever. Just keep on putting up those touchdowns there for the Ducks. And that's kind of crazy, though. The transformation of Bo Nix in your eyes, where you couldn't stand him heading into last year, and then he was your second pick in this exercise with not putting Caleb Williams and Drake May on the board.
And the big game, I thought they were going to the playoff last year. The big game they lost, he was more injured than anything else. They needed Bo Nix. They needed Bo.
Well, I hate to be this guy, but you thought a lot of teams were going to the college football playoff last year. We went through a stretch where whoever you said was going to the playoff would then lose that Saturday. So I don't know if that's a good thing if you're giving your endorsement out here.
Dylan Gabriel, Oklahoma. Let's go. Doubling down. All right, on the Sooners. Boomer.
You can't do that. I'm sorry. Oh, geez, Louise. I feel bad for Venables. Finally, Alexa take a head coaching gig, and then back-to-back year as Hickey is lining up to endorse him. Boomer Sooner. Maybe Bummer Sooner coming up this year if Hickey just keeps on picking you guys each and every year. It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. We'll come on back. We'll talk about the future of Giannis Antetokounmpo.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. So let's spend a few moments talking about the Bucks as we'll circle back from a conversation that we had on Thursday. But first, you can think of Riley Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts. So my instant reaction, I had two thoughts the moment we found out on Thursday's show, and I wasn't here on Friday, that Mike Budenholzer got dismissed as the head coach of the Milwaukee Bucks. The first thought was that maybe there's fear in the mind of the Bucks organization that Giannis in a few years, when his contract is up, or when he has his player option, which is 2025, 2026, when that player option a decision has to be made, that the Bucks made this move. Not that it was a bad relationship between Budenholzer and Giannis, but they thought that Bud may be maxed out in Milwaukee, won a championship, and they needed a change in voice, a change in leadership to reignite those championship desires or those championship performances that the Bucks had. So that was that first thought, that clearly guys like Peter Fagan and John Horst, who do truly love Mike Budenholzer, from my understanding of the relationship, thought that this was a move that had to be made, maybe because there could be some thought that Giannis could have second thoughts about staying in Milwaukee. The other thought that I gave you, when we were talking about names, and I expect this to be an extensive search, this is going to be a job that is in demand, and it's going to be the top job on the market, because you have, for now, and under contract for at least 2 years, the best player, or arguably the best player in the league, one of the best players in the league, in Giannis Antetokounmpo. And what I said on Thursday was everyone right away, and to give credit to Hickey, he brought this name up right away in Nick Nurse. We talked about, okay, Quinn Snyder, who in the middle of the year elected to join the Atlanta Hawks. We were like, why would you do that right there, right now? It didn't make sense. He still would have been one of the top candidates in the offseason. So Snyder's off the board. Nick Nurse is available. And I said, don't be surprised if someone in the league right now that already has a job tries to get out of their job or tries to get traded in order to go get that gig. And the name that I threw out there was Ty Lue. And Ty Lue, I think, would be a home run hire for the Milwaukee Bucks. You know how much the players in the league respect him. He's proven in Los Angeles, even with his stars not healthy, he's still been a good coach. We know he's won a championship with LeBron and the Cavs. And you can say, oh, it was LeBron. It was with the Cavs. That was LeBron's team. You're not wrong. But the team did win a championship with him. And without really being able to rely on Paul George and Kawhi Leonard to be healthy, he's still done a very good job and has gained a lot of respect in the NBA. So I look at a guy like Ty Lue to maybe be in play if he wants out and if he is very frustrated with the just current state of the Clippers, where it's no one's fault, but you just can't rely on Kawhi and Paul George to be healthy. But I want to go back to the first part about what I said, in that this idea that maybe Giannis sees Mike Budenholzer go, and it's like, okay, we got to make sure we do everything in our power in the next 2 years to make sure that he wants to stay when that player option is up. And I know, right, in September he could agree to an extension, and just because you agree to an extension doesn't mean that you're going to find a way to get a deal done. But the last time Giannis was up for a contract, like, he waited a while until eventually taking that extension. And the Bucks proved to him that they could put together a championship caliber team or make the moves to have Giannis say, okay, I want to stay. And now I think you're at a point where you need to prove to Giannis that you could do that again. Because Giannis being at the podium, and I know Giannis has been, and understandably so, and we commend him for doing so, very open about mental health. But Giannis at the podium with the conversation about failure, that may be something that was a bigger conversation, but the way that I took that conversation was he's annoyed. He's frustrated because down deep he knows the team failed. Now, you can't win it all each and every year, but when you are the number one seed and you lose in the first round to the eighth seed, I know you can say, oh, Miami's not your traditional eighth seed. That is a failure. No matter how you want to talk about it publicly, no matter how you want to spin it. And this is, in my opinion, the Bucks resetting, it's not as if like they're going to be horrible next year, but they're resetting the roster, resetting the way the coaching staff is going to work so they could go take advantage and continue to take advantage, not only the prime years of Giannis, but get back there and make Giannis want to stay. Because for the first time in a while, and I know Giannis went through that time of winning MVPs, number one seeds, coming up short, and people had a lot of backlash. But ever since winning that championship, it's been words and words and words of extolment directed to the Bucks and also Giannis Antetokounmpo. And it's only been a few years. It's not like it's been 5, 6, 7 years since they won the title. So with the way that this has unfolded, this is Milwaukee saying what happened this year was not good enough. It's clearly not all on Mike Budenholzer, but they thought that this move had to be made. And I'm just so fascinated to see what the big plan is of Milwaukee this offseason. Because Chris Middleton has a player option. We'll see if they'll bring back Brook Lopez, who's only getting older and older, even though he's still a good player. Jrue Holiday, even though he made an All-Star game this year, he was not great down the stretch. It's like, what are the Bucks going to do to not only improve their chances of a championship, not have what happened this year repeat itself, and just going out there getting a new coach, I don't think does that. Like, if they get Ty Lue, and if they find the way to pull off a trade for Ty Lue, it's a good move. But you're going to have to make alterations to this roster. And Hickey, it's weird because usually whenever I throw out this name, I feel like we throw it out to a big market, like maybe New York or maybe Miami, where this name has been tossed around a bunch. A guy like Damian Lillard, who doesn't want to be the villain, doesn't want to be the bad guy, and I think he fears being that bad guy. And he's someone that I think everyone understands. If he wanted out of Portland, we would say, thank you, it's about time. It's nothing against Portland. It's nothing against a city. It's just a guy like Dame Lillard is deserving of that chance to really go compete for that championship. And in Portland, it feels like the apex of Dame with the team result was going to be when he got to the Western Conference Finals and they lost to Golden State a few years back. I don't know how you get it done. I don't know who you're giving up. But I wonder if maybe this offseason, with Dame saying, I don't want to be there for a rebuild. I don't want to be there if Portland's going to continue to just go with younger players in the draft. Maybe Dame finally does want out, and maybe it's the Bucks who come calling, and you team up Giannis Antetokounmpo and Dame Lillard. That was a thought that I had over the weekend once we got past the initial stuff of why Bud got fired, and then also who his replacements could be. It's how you could fix this roster. And I look at Dame, that would be one heck of a duo, Giannis and Dame.
It'd be a lot of fun, that's for sure. I have no idea how that's going to work, like salary cap-wise. And that's, I think, also part of the issue when talking about Giannis and his future. Like, it's going to be really tough to build another championship team, just in the sense that now with the new rules and the new CBA with the NBA, they are coming down hard on teams that spend and spend a lot of money. So that's part of the tricky part here for Giannis and the Bucks is just like they don't have a lot of cap space in general to begin with.
And the Haslam just came in too.
And you have an ownership change and you look at how the Haslams are running the Browns, not exactly a reason to, be jumping for joy or feel very confident. And I just don't know how it's gonna happen.
Now I don't know how you would get the deal done. You'd have to give up a ton of picks because if Portland is trading Dame, they're gonna look for a really young player or they're gonna look for picks. Middleton, I don't think at his age of 31, you're probably not doing a sign and trade there. So it would definitely have to be with a ton of picks. And I got to see, to be fair, what picks the Bucks still have left because it's so weird with how they do it in the NBA and all that stuff.
They gave up three firsts for Jrue Holiday. So
I don't know. And it's every other year. Mm-hmm. And Jrue only has 1 year left until he has a player option. So do you look to trade Jrue to somewhere else this offseason? You say goodbye to Middleton and you get the deal done for Dame Lillard. Maybe easier said than done. That's probably what you would have to do, but it does feel like this roster is going to be totally revamped next year in Milwaukee. And I know how much Peter Fagan loves Chris Middleton. I wonder how and Giannis always talks about how much he loves Chris Middleton. If you go to try to do something else and then you swing and miss and Middleton goes elsewhere, it's like, uh-oh, did you just then run the risk of losing Giannis? So that's the tricky part because Middleton, we've seen his importance to that team when they won it all. Last year, was not able to stay on the court. And this year, just the entire team was just atrocious up against the Miami Heat. You just wonder how you would get that done. But that was just what came to mind was, is there a way that they could get Dame to Milwaukee? Because you put Dame and Giannis together, and from the Dame side, I don't think anyone's going to be bitching and complaining about Dame going to chase for a championship because a lot of people are still skeptical about Miami, and they don't view Milwaukee, and they don't view Milwaukee in the same way as they would view Dame going maybe somewhere else to try to go get that championship. So it's a good idea, but as I prefaced it, I don't know how you're going to find the way to get it done. it would come at the expense of Middleton, and then you got to figure out what capital you do have left over after that. And this is Zach Gilb Show on CBS Sports Radio. We'll take a timeout. When we come on back, we'll update you on some of the biggest stories of the day with some audio. We call that segment the News Brief. Eddie Johnson still to come at 8:20 p.m. Eastern, 5:20 p.m. Pacific. And Anthony Gargano will join us to talk about the Sixers tying up that series at 2 games apiece at 9:20 p.m. Eastern, 6:20 p.m. Pacific.
In America, it's estimated that 4% of people in prison are actually innocent.
When I saw them for the very first time, like I knew who my jury would be doing trial. To be honest, I knew I lost then.
In 2002, the state of Georgia found Kerry guilty for his alleged involvement in a vicious rape. Only a small percentage of those people have their convictions overturned.
You know, as one great justice said many years ago, we don't find our witnesses from church pews.
What series of events led to Kerry's wrongful conviction? Could this happen to anyone? What finally convinced the courts to overturn his conviction? From Zapier, in partnership with the Georgia Innocence Project, this is the 4%. Listen anywhere you get your podcasts or visit zapier.com/resources/podcasts to learn more.